In a stupid movie, shark is the fastest transportation available. See, if you're going to London from New York, let's say, right? Tear up them Concorde tickets, get the next fish out of town.
Radio Drome. It's another episode of Radio Drome. I am Josh. Hadley. Cecil, do you know what the topic is tonight?
Shark! Shark! Shark!
Peter, throw us some Jaws line.
In a stupid movie, the shark is the fastest mode of transportation.
Then I see a line that's more of a critical accusation.
That's
but not one
I'll
can't disagree
into...
with. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about the Jaws franchise. And now tonight it will be just the Jaws franchise. Next week we'll deal with the spawn of Jaws, all the ripoffs, because otherwise we'd have a 5-hour damn show. So I want to talk about just the Jaws franchise tonight. But now, Peter, do you know what other kind of Jaws people can end up getting?
What other kinds of Jaws?
Adam and Eve promo!
Am I being made to do the promo? Is that what's going on here?
Was I too subtle?
Not really, no. You can, I don't know what kind of sex toy a Jaws would be.
I know they have those, like, mouths that you
those,
can
those, like, ball
use.
Gag, those, like, I used to work at a sex shop, and they had, like, reverse ball gags that, like, keep your mouth open. You can get yourself one of those at adamandeve.com, and if you use the promo code DROME, you can get 10 free gifts. That's a gift for him, a gift for her, 6 free DVDs, free U.S. shipping, so if you're Canadian, you're kind of shit out of luck for that. And again, that's if you use the promo code DROME on adamandeve.com.
You also get just a straight-up mystery gift.
And a straight-up, and a mystery gift. That's right.
Well, it might not be straight. I mean, sure, it'll go up. It
could
might
be,
I don't know.
Could be both. Could be bi.
That's
you never
true.
Know.
That's very, very true. So
there is a Jaws porno.
Gums?
Well, there's Gums, and there's This Ain't Jaws in 3D.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so such an original title.
You know what you're getting.
I mean, hell, in Gums, you get Brother Theodore, because that's what you want in a porno, right?
Okay, what is the shark in a Jaws porno parody? Seriously.
It's a woman who blows guys while underwater and then bites their penis off. Gums. And Brother Theodore
Quint. I was literally just picturing a dude with a huge dick that has like a fin tied to his back. And he just walks into the room and goes, "You're going to need a bigger pussy."
And what would Brother Theodore have to do with that? But we're going to talk about the Jaws franchise. It's summer. People are going to the beach. We need to instill a fear of the beach in people again. Jaws is arguably called the first blockbuster. And I would say, with the exception of Planet of the Apes, I agree with that. And Planet of the Apes will come up again later tonight as well, in a weird way. Jaws. The first film, at the time, was the highest grossing movie in history. Made on a $9 million budget in 1975, it only made $471 million in its theatrical run. Just a tiny bit of profit.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, it made a couple of bucks. It barely made its money back.
What was your first encounter with Jaws? I mean, this is the year I was born, and neither of you were born at this point, but did you see it on video? Did you see it on TV? Did you have it hyped up for you? How did you encounter Jaws for the first time?
I remember watching it on TV. I don't remember specifically when. I know I was very young. And I believe I had just caught the tail end of it. Like, it was when Quint was being devoured by
Would you say you
Jaws.
Caught the dorsal fin?
Yes. But yeah, I remember seeing a bit of it and thinking that was cool, seeing a giant shark devouring a guy on a boat. And then I saw it later on and, rented it and began to appreciate it more. And I think it really deserves the praise it gets as a classic. I think it really is one of the all time classic, not just horror movies, not just when animals attack movies, but one of the all time just classic films that you can encounter.
I don't remember exactly. It was one of two ways. Either I saw it on TV, or there was a drive-in theater that ran like all through the 80s and a little bit into the 90s that was near my house. And my folks used to take me and my sister there. So I don't I know I saw it on TV and in the drive-in theater, but I don't remember which, you know, one I saw first. But I just remember, you know, really enjoying it and being terrified of sharks. Thankfully, I never really got into the whole like afraid to go to the beach thing. But I remember that was a big thing back when the movie first came out, where people were just like, nope, not going near the beach.
Jaws, coming out in 1975, a complete train wreck of a movie on a production level. Nothing worked. Script constantly being rewritten. The cast all over the place. I think Jaws, weirdly enough, is the best accidental masterpiece ever made. I think it is a masterpiece of a movie, and it wasn't supposed to be. Spielberg freely admits if the damn shark had worked, you would have seen it much more. One of the things that works in the movie is that you don't see it. He says he would have made a giant monster movie. So I think the movie being as good as it is a fluke. It literally is a fluke, and that's part of the charm. But this movie was originally a very different film that, based on Peter Benchley's 1974 novel, Jaws, we know the cast, the acting is just so perfect, but it almost wasn't. Originally, none of the cast members that we know were in their roles. Originally, Robert Duvall was wanted to play Sheriff Brody, but then he said he was more interested in playing Quint. So at that point, they were going to have Robert Duvall play Quint. And then they wanted Charlton Heston to play Brody. Steven Spielberg didn't want Charlton Heston in the role. He figured out he was too much larger than life and he would take over the production, as Heston is wont to do. So they didn't cast Heston. So now Roy Scheider at this point had already been cast as Quint. So they moved Roy Scheider from Quint to Brody after they lost Heston. Robert Duvall had fallen out at this point. So they needed to cast Matt Hooper. And it was between either Jeff Bridges or Jan Michael Vincent, because they were still going off the novel version where the Hooper character is kind of a ladies' man and has an affair with Ellen Brody. Just knowing that, that would have changed everything in the movie with just these little few casting changes, wouldn't it have?
It would have made a major difference. It, like you said, it is a accidental masterpiece because there's every now and then a movie will come along where something will happen that will greatly affect the film, like with this, the shark not working and them not showing it till the end. Because if you wouldn't have had that buildup, if you would have seen it throughout the movie, it wouldn't have had that impact at the end. Having the different cast, like having the people not the same, kind of goes in with like Star Wars, where
I love Kurt Russell, but he's not Han Solo.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's not Han Solo. Neither is Christopher Walken. Neither is Gary Busey. It would not be the same movie. And there's a good chance that if things had worked the way that was initially planned, if they put together the Jaws that they originally wanted, we would not be sitting here talking about it this evening.
I think if Jaws had ended up being the movie that Steven Spielberg originally wanted it to be, one where you see the shark a hell of a lot more and a cast of characters that are a lot different, I don't think it would have been as well-renowned as a film as it ended up being. As Cecil was saying, the fact that you don't see the shark very much, as that was an unintentional thing and he wanted to show it more, it adds so much dread to the movie and it makes the reveal all that much more scary and intense because it's this big buildup to it. And I think that's why the sequels ended up falling so flat, because they were the big stupid rubber shark monster movies that the original would have ended up being. And it's probably not the only reason why the sequels are not as well regarded and cheaper, but it is, I think, a reason why they look
actually
a lot cheaper.
I'm going to stop you. The sequels kept going up in budget all the way through 4. So cheaper, I have to correct you on. They were not cheaper. Jaws was the cheapest of all the Jaws movies.
It looked cheap, though. The shark looked terrible in all of them.
Well, Jaws was made on $9 million. 2 and 3 were each made on $21 million, and 4 was made on $23 million.
Oh, my God, which is really upsetting, considering that 4 feels like one of the bad canon movies.
This film, it wasn't meant – they didn't promote this movie knowing, like the way we now see a blockbuster promoted. That's not how Jaws was promoted. It was promoted, again, almost by accident. That gorgeous voiceover narration in the trailer, that was supposed to be very loud and bombastic, and the shark is coming! And the narrator decided, no, I think this needs to be underplayed, and you need to let the imagery and the score carry this. And he said, my narration should be underplayed.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws.
They made two cuts, one of him being all bombastic and one with the trailer that we know. So again, it almost seems like every single thing that works in Jaws was a fluke. It seems like this movie should not have been a good movie. And I think that's one of the reasons it's so great. Why do you think Jaws worked seemingly despite itself?
Because essentially, by the way that they did it, it kind of turned into a horror movie. So it, instead of a monster movie, thrilling moments to it of not seeing the monster. And it's probably going into Spielberg and his directing, it probably did a lot to teach him how to kind of hold back. Because in some of his later films, Jurassic Park 1 versus Jurassic Park 2, in Jurassic Park 1, because of the technology and everything, they really was only about 15 minutes worth of dinosaur footage in the film. Whereas in Jurassic Park 2, there was so much more dinosaurs. The same could be for Jaws, where it's since you don't see the shark, since the acting is so good, it pulls you into it. And then when you finally do get to see the monster, it's that holy shit moment. And what makes it so much more scary than if you were just seeing it throughout the whole film. Because realistically, if you were to see it the whole film, it looks good, but it's like, how many scenes would it have been believable? I know at the end when they just kind of propped it up on the boat and just kind of were working the jaw on it. Because if you look at it, it's not moving a whole
Robert
lot.
Robert Shaw's more... almost pushing himself into the mouth.
Yeah, exactly. So if they had showed a lot of that throughout the film, it would have been like, all right, this is not good, you know, and it would have been kind of laughable and, you know, people would have been making fun of it as opposed to, holy shit, this guy's being eaten by a shark.
Lines around the block. Now, they took a huge chance on this, but they, in a way, created an artificial hype around the movie. They were originally going to release it on 900 screens, which for the 70s is almost nationwide. And then someone in the marketing department had very risky but very genius idea. Cut it to 400 screens, and then people will have to call their theater. We do an ad campaign, call your theater to get Jaws. Therefore, making the news go, this is a movie people are clamoring for. So in a way, that could have backfired really, really bad, but it didn't.
Because of it's everything we've already been saying, it was a fluke in the absolute best way. Everything that they wanted to work didn't work.
It was a series of flukes. This wasn't a fluke. This was one fluke after another. This was a chain reaction.
And everything just ended up somehow working. That that ad campaign that really could have backfired, but people could have not called and not requested it, but people did want to see it. There was a genuine interest in the movie. The trailer really worked with the kind of the downplayed, that vibe of oncoming terror in this sort of build-up way. And the trailer really ended up illustrating what the movie ended up being like, I think. This storm that's rising that ends up being the really gruesome finale where you actually see the shark. And I think that all worked. The movie completely did work despite itself because of all the flukes for whatever reason. It doesn't happen often, but it's a movie that if, like I said, if it was made the way that Spielberg had originally wanted to make it, it just would have been another run-of-the-mill rubber monster movie.
Now, that said, this movie breaking box office records around not just the country, but the world, this part is a little bit up for debate. Universal, Spielberg, and a bunch of other people say that this was the first movie that ever capitalized on merchandising. Remember, we're still 2 years away from Star Wars. I disagree with that, because after the second Planet of the Apes film, there were Planet of the Apes merchandise everywhere. So I'd say Fox beat them by a couple of years to the merchandising a movie thing. The movie also has one of the scariest speeches ever. Quint's USS Indianapolis speech is one of the most chilling 5 minutes of just dialogue that I think you'll ever hear. And that wasn't even intended in the movie. John Milius wrote that speech, which Robert Shaw then pared down to what ended up in the film, as a way to kill some time and add some footage for one of the times the shark wasn't working. Again, one of a perfect accident. Is that USS Indianapolis speech not one of the most chilling 5 minutes you've ever seen?
Lifeless eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Your Robert Shaw accent is terrible.
Good. What do you want? You know, I'm nowhere near, God, barely anybody's near his level. He delivers that so well. You are riveted. Like, there are a lot of movies where there is extended dialogue where you're like, oh, can we get back to the break? But you're hanging on his every word. The way he's delivering that, you're just like, holy crap. Like, if you think he actually went through that, the way that he describes it, it definitely just adds to the tension and brings you in and sets the tone further towards like scary, like, holy crap. This guy's lived through this stuff before, and made his exit that much more painful towards the end of the film, because it's like, oh, he went through all this, and now,
Yeah, but he did kind of split with reality at that point. He was going crazy by the end.
Yeah, but still, you know, you live through that, you don't want to be eaten by a shark.
But it was an amazing performance, and I don't know where I read this or heard it, but wasn't Robert Shaw drunk throughout most of Jaws?
Yes, he was. Robert Shaw was an alcoholic, and he died 3 years after Jaws was made by a heart condition caused by his alcoholism. Yeah, he was a hard, hard drinker.
And I think that added to the role, too, because you really got like a genuine vibe out of him that he really was this like shell-shocked alcoholic war vet. And it made that speech. I think what added the sort of genuine reality to it, that it was not only coming from the character, but you also had him, and it's a dark thing to say, I guess, but you had a guy that genuinely had demons telling a story of a character that has a lot of demons.
Jaws comes out. It's this mega hit. It's parodied all over the place. Saturday Night Live's one of their earliest gags is the land shark. I mean, it's parodied everywhere. It's on Mad Magazine. It's on Time Magazine, Newsweek. Jaws is a full-fledged phenomena at this point. The novel, which was a middling seller, the novel by Peter Benchley was selling all right before the movie. After the movie, they could not print copies of the book fast enough. There was literally a shortage of paperbacks. That's how big this movie got so fast. And I think people who were not alive in the 70s don't remember that kind of thing. Because in the internet era, that's relatively rare. You knew with a film this big, Universal was not just going to sit on their laurels. I mean, they did re-release it in 78, but you knew they were going to make a sequel. You knew they were. I mean, 20th Century Fox had started making Planet of the Apes sequels at this point. Now, sequels were relatively rare still at this point. You had the Planet of the Apes movies. There were a couple of Dirty Harry sequels. There was the Quatermass movies. We did not have – when a movie came out back then, you did not go, well, I'm sure there's going to be a sequel. That's just not how the 70s operated. So it should be a little bit of a surprise that Jaws 2 is as good as it is. It was originally going to be way different in a couple of ways. Initially, they didn't want a sequel. Somebody at Universal came up with the bright idea, let's make a prequel about Quint's time on the USS Indianapolis. So they initially wanted a prequel. Someone else at Universal, probably Sid Sheinberg, said, we need to stick with the characters we know. We need to stick with Brody and Hooper. And of course, we know they couldn't get Hooper, but at this point, they were hoping to get Hooper. So,
also, I don't think they would have had the budget to do Quint's backstory either. It's like he talks about like hundreds of tiger sharks and all this stuff. Like there's No way they could have done that.
But this movie did have a $20 million budget, and it made $188 million, so not the blockbuster that the first film was, but hell of a sequel. This film had two different directors. Originally, John D. Hancock was helming the picture, and he shot for about 3 weeks. Universal was not liking the dailies. They said it was too dark, because there was humor in the original Jaws. They said it was too dark, it's too serious, and so Hancock was fired, and they brought in Jeanette Jaworek from Night Gallery and a lot of other Universal productions. Problem here was Roy Scheider did not want to do Jaws 2. I mean, Robert Shaw is dead at this point, so they can't get him. Richard Dreyfuss is off doing other stuff. Roy Scheider didn't want to do it, but he had a three-picture deal with Universal at the time. This shows you how bad they wanted Brody in this. Yeah. He had just made Sorcerer for them, William Friedkin's movie. And so he still had two pictures on his deal, and he wanted out. They said, do Jaws 2, and we'll count that as two films. So it gets you out of your contract. Problem is, he signed on to do the film with John D. Hancock. Him and Jeanette Jaworek hated one another.
Oh, man.
And they made that very known on the set, that these two people do not get along. Roy Scheider's a true actor. As soon as Jaworek yelled action, he did what Jaworek wanted him to do. So that proves what a real actor Scheider was. Saying all of that, is it a surprise that Jaws 2 is pretty decent?
I like Jaws 2 a lot. It does feel like a genuine sequel. It's good. It has a very satisfying ending. It doesn't have the tension that the first one did. But it's got a lot of really cool moments. It's got the barbecued guy and Roy Scheider's performance. It's
Roy
cool.
Scheider's performance. I want to highlight Roy Scheider's performance because you're absolutely right, Cecil. He plays this. We didn't even have this term then, but he plays this movie like someone with PTSD, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
The way he's
putting
the cyanide on the bullets and some of his reactions. Remember, at this point in time, we still called this shell shock. But looking back at it, he's playing a PTSD victim, isn't he, from the events of the first film? I think Scheider's performance is very nuanced, and he gives a fantastic performance in a film that he doesn't want to be in.
Well, it goes to show how much of a professional he is. It's like there are a lot of actors that will stamp their feet and cry and give a shitty performance for a movie that they got stuck in. But here's a pro who, all right, he's in a movie that it's not that he didn't want to be in it. It's that, you know, with the new director and everything, things kind of changed and he no longer wanted to be in it. But he didn't crap out. He still gave an A-plus performance. And there's nobody who would say that it was bad because of that. The movie is quite good. Who knows? Sometimes a little agitation on set leads to a better performance. Yeah, with the right director. You know, there are some, or with the right actor, I should say. There are a lot of crap actors out there who just give crap performances unless they have a director who completely hones them in. It's a great movie. It's one that I haven't seen as much as I probably should have it's not the quality of the first film, but it is a damn solid follow-up.
Agreed. I think it is a solid movie. I think I consider Jaws 1 and 2 to be on par with each other. I just think it's a really good continuation of the story. I love Scheider's performance, and as you and Cecil were talking about, it really does show the quality of an actor. Can you work under pressure? Can you work with people you don't get along with and still deliver? Roy Scheider can. He didn't cop out. Scheider was great. I dug the whole shell shock thing where, you know, he's dipping the bullets in the the
cyanide,
mercury, cyanide. Yes, like a vigilante kind of vibe to it, almost like Robert Ginty in The Exterminator. And just when he goes nuts at the beach on the watchtower, when he mistakes the school of bluefish for the shark and he starts firing off into the water. And what I love about that scene is when he's standing and he has his back to everybody at the beach and the camera is just on him and everybody is standing behind him, and you just see this look on his face like he doesn't want to move from that position because he knows that he has to look at everybody thinking that he's a fucking maniac now. Like he just has that total sense of self-awareness, like, oh God, what did I just do? Like, and you can see it all of it reads in his face. And I think that that really shows the quality of just how amazing he is as an actor. And that even if he didn't get along with the director and they were maybe arguing in between takes and stuff, he, my God, what a fucking performance and what a movie. I consider Jaws 1 and 2 to be equally amazing, just totally satisfying films. And yeah, like Cecil said, awesome ending with what was like the power cord thing, the wire that was under the water that the shark bites into and just roasts it. Like, it's great. It's a great movie.
This one had more of, like Cecil pointed out earlier, more of what I guess the first one wanted to be. You see the shark a lot more in this one. You very much get, even though slasher movies aren't a thing yet, this one has more of a slasher movie vibe to it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's even stalking horny teenagers at this point. This one kind of would be almost a prototypical slasher movie, if you will. It doesn't flow as well to me. I think the edit could have been a little bit tighter. Zwarek came from television. He hadn't done a whole lot of movies. This one feels more like a TV movie to me. And then there's one, because continuity is going to come up in the sequels here. There's one little continuity error that's weird. They say that this is 2 years later after the events of the first film, yet his son is aged 5.5 years. So I'm like, okay, that was a little bit of a weird cheat. It was a hit. Like I said, it made $188 million on a $20 million budget. And now the marketing is still going nuts at this point. You name it, you can buy a Jaws product of anything. They had Jaws toilet seats, Jaws kitchen, Jaws, you name it. They had Jaws oven mitts, you know, in the shape
of a
shark.
You poop in the shark's mouth.
I guess technically, because, yeah, you would pick up the toilet seat and the Jaws open mouth would be on the back. I'm not kidding. They really have that, Cecil.
I think I'm going to have to go on eBay.
So they're merchandising the hell out of this. So you knew there was going to be another sequel. Now, this one would take a little bit. We wouldn't get a sequel for another 5 years. In 1983, we came out with Jaws 3D. This one on a $20.5 million budget made $88 million. So the budgets are going up. The returns are going down. This one was almost made to capitalize on the resurgence of the 3D trend. It was a very different movie in a couple of regards. First, this one started out as a spoof of the Jaws movies made by Universal. They had contracted the National Lampoon Company, and Joe Dante was going to direct it, and it was called Jaws 3 People Zero, and it was about, the plot was Universal was trying to make a third Jaws movie, but every body of water, including the toilets, would have a shark in it that kept killing all of the crew, and it was done in a Zucker Brothers style. The script is brilliant, and I absolutely could have seen Joe Dante pulling this off, but then somebody thought at Universal thought, it would be a mistake to spoof their own movie that if we're not taking it seriously, how do we expect other people to? They killed that idea. Then they went with the whole theme park idea. They hired Richard fucking Matheson to write the script for this. Steven Spielberg recommended him directly. Richard Matheson is credited as the writer of this thing, but he says there's very little of his script still in the movie, but because he was the biggest name, they kept his name on the writing credits, so he's been blamed for this movie for years, which he didn't like. Kind of like how the Alien franchise, 20th Century Fox always says, we have to have Ripley in it. It has to have Ripley in it. This one, they said, we've got to have the Brodies. We need Chief Brody. Roy Scheider, no way was he going to do it. I'm quoting, Mephistopheles couldn't talk me into doing this. They know better than to even ask. And just in case Universal wanted to try to pull a contract on him, he specifically agreed to do the movie Blue Thunder, so he would be unavailable during the shooting of Jaws 3D. That's how much he did not want to be roped into this for even a cameo. All that said, the crappy effects, the goofy story, I like Jaws 3, and I don't know why. It's got a bad story, bad acting, bad effects, stupid plot, and I can't not watch it anytime it's on TV. I have a weird affinity for this. It's a bad movie that I like anyway.
I think it is one of the best bad movies out there. Everybody goes on and on about shit like Troll 2. For me, I think Jaws 3 is one of those really great, like, you know it's terrible. The effects, and specifically when it comes to, because this movie was shot for 3D. And in the time that it came out, they hadn't quite really mastered that. They didn't really know what they were doing. It was just a is a cheap gimmick to get into the theaters, and it would work with the glasses, but it would ultimately look really weird and off. And there's a specific effect where the shark is coming toward the glass in the underwater.
I thought you were gonna talk about when he blows up and his jawbone and stuff just kind of float in front of the camera for 15 seconds.
That looks amazing. That looks amazing in comparison to the cardboard cutout looking shark slowly clipping toward the glass and then stopping. Just completely stopping as these blue glass shards break, and it's just I rewind that a good 6 times when I'm watching the movie, because I'm in fucking tears when I see that shit. And to sort of cross promote our co-hosts, I consider Jaws 3 to be one of the best good bad flicks out there.
Oh, absolutely. I love the scene. As soon as you started talking about it, I knew that's the scene that you were going to bring up. It is hilarious because the shark very slowly wiggles towards the thing. And then, like you said, it stops, dead stop. And then all of a sudden, these awful shards of cut out of whatever come flying at the screen. And then it cuts to water rushing in. It's so bad. It's so bad. Oh, I love Jaws 3. I think that so many just wonderful moments. There's that. There's the guy getting eaten, the inside the shark's mouth.
Simon McCorkindale, even though he's only in the movie for about 20 minutes, steals this movie from the main cast.
Yeah, it's terrific.
His arm at the end is still holding the grenade, and that's how they end up killing the shark, by pulling the pin.
he should have used
his severed arm that for whatever reason is still on the shark's tongue. It's so shit, but so beautiful.
Peter, he should have used his manimal powers. He could have survived. He turned into a shark in the pilot of Manimal. Well, Jaws 3, probably its weakest point outside of the theater would be the fact that it looks like crap. Because of how they shot it in 3D, for the Anaglyph 3D, even when it's in 2D, it has this weird, fuzzy, soft tone to everything, to the point where when you see it on TV or even the DVD, it's got this weird, soft look to it. It kind of looks like a second or third generation VHS dub. Yeah. So there really isn't even a good quality print of this thing out there, which is a shame. Yeah.
It's the same as Friday the 13th Part 3, because they shot it with the camera specifically for 3D effects. So even on Blu-ray releases, it still looks like it's
softer
a movie
than
the
rest
from the mid-70s.
In this one, you got Louis Gossett Jr. always giving a fine performance. You got Simon McCorkindale just stealing the goddamn movie. And then you've got Bess Armstrong and Dennis Quaid as our main characters. Dennis Quaid is supposed to be playing Mike Brody. Dennis Quaid was 30 when he made this, but if we're going chronologically, the Mike Brody character should be in his early 20s at best. I don't know if this takes place in the future or if they really just don't care about continuity at this point. But this is supposed to be the same character that was in the first two movies, which when you break it down means that Mike and Sean Brody are the only characters that are in all four movies, not counting the shark, which I'll get into the stupidity later. Jaws 3D was a hit with audiences, not with critics. And it was such a not hit with critics that when they made the final Jaws movie, Jaws the Revenge in 1987, Universal didn't even count this as a Jaws movie. Literally, the press release that they sent out said, "Jaws the Revenge, the third film in the remarkable Jaws trilogy," unquote. So even Universal was saying, no, Jaws the Revenge counts more than Jaws 3D did.
Oh, what?
That tells you how much Universal hated Jaws 3. We got to get into some weird, weird backstory for Jaws the Revenge. The heads of Universal did not like the dwindling box office, for one, on Jaws 3D, but they didn't like the fact that it, quote, lost the human connection, that they didn't have the Brodies that they wanted. So they told Joseph Sargent, when he made Jaws the Revenge, they want a movie about people, about the people. This is supposed to be a character-driven movie. Yeah, you guys know this is... the only thing I'll say is Lance Guest really does a good job in this. He's the only one. I don't care that Michael Caine won an Oscar while making this, but Michael Caine won an Oscar for Hannah and Her Sisters while he was making Jaws the Revenge. Lance Guest is the only thing to take away from this movie on a non-ironic level. But Jaws the Revenge, they decided that literally they said this was a dictate from Universal. They wanted this to be a people movie, and they wanted it to be the same shark from all of the other movies. So now Universal has said it's been the same shark. And remember, in Jaws 3, it was technically two sharks the whole time. So technically, does that not make this a ghost shark, if you think about it?
It might explain how it beat a jet to another location.
Well, yeah, I mean, shark is the fastest way to travel, isn't it?
Yep, that's what...
But, so, this one, Roy Scheider's character is dead. Brody has had a heart attack. Ellen Brody, played by Lauren Gary, is the only actor from the originals back. Sean gets killed because the shark is out for revenge. It's stalking the Brody family now, because remember, it's a ghost shark. Mm-hmm. Literally, I'm not being facetious on that. According to Universal, it's the same shark. Therefore, even though it got blown up three times and electrocuted to death once, same shark, it's a goddamn ghost. The ghost shark is going full Jason Voorhees, Michael Myers, and it's become a slasher villain stalking the Brody family. And it stalks Mike to the Bahamas along with Ellen, and she has now a psychic connection to the shark. Again, people who haven't seen this, I'm not making this up. She has a psychic connection to the shark, and she's trying to save Mike's life along with her granddaughter Thea in the Bahamas, and he's partnered with Jake, played by Mario Van Peebles, somehow can survive being bitten in half. I'll get to that in a minute. And she has an affair with Michael Caine, who is a money launderer for the mob, although that's a cut subplot.
Named Hoagie.
Hoagie, yes.
Named Hoagie.
This has the largest budget at $23 million of all of the movies.
Just how?
I can't explain it. I'm telling you what really happened, Peter.
Let's just say it. It was all spent on Michael Caine.
It might have been. So
I would say probably a lot of that was because they probably did film in the Bahamas.
Yeah, it was shot on location in the Bahamas for the most part. Mm-hmm. Won the seven Golden Raspberry Awards and was the first movie to ever be voted the worst movie of all time in the first year of its release. Other films like Plan 9 and that have been voted worst movie of all time, but that's years later. Mm-hmm. This film was still in theaters when it was voted the worst movie of all time.
Good.
It's hilarious. Everything from the...
I exaggerate a single bit of the ridiculous plot?
No, you actually left out some stuff, like how the mom keeps seeing flashbacks to her children getting killed when she wasn't there.
And to Brody to Chief Brody killing the first shark.
Right, she keeps seeing stuff that she wasn't available. Like, it's like, you weren't there. How are you seeing this stuff?
Well, I told you she's got a psychic bond. I told you she's got a psychic bond with the shark now.
She's got a psychic bond with the shark. It's a great white shark that can't survive in the water around the Bahamas. It beat the jet down to there. Like, it not only, I guess the psychic connection is how it knew where they were going, because otherwise, how would if you got into a jet and flew to the Bahamas, how the hell is a shark going to follow you all the way down there?
Because he's now a slasher villain.
He's now a slasher villain. He's a ghost shark slasher villain.
Well, I just thought of something else. The shark also changed genders. Because remember, the shark in Jaws 3, remember, it's all the same shark, was a female because it had a baby.
It was a mother in the third.
So the shark has changed genders now, too.
And the great grand finale, the shark roars.
And it also roars with a whole bunch of mechanical equipment in its throat.
Yeah,
Clearly visible equipment.
Hilarious. It's the comedy that they wanted 3 to be, but they didn't realize they were making a comedy. I like it so much because it's so just as influential and as beloved as the first movie is. And then you look at this is so far removed from how the first movie was. Like, the first movie, incredible acting, scary, really well shot, an amazing looking shark at the end. In this, the shark looks like crap. The acting is just passable. It's comedically written. There's no like outstanding performance in it. It's just, it's a comedy. It's an unintentional comedy.
Jaws 4 became its own parody.
It really did.
It stinks, but it's hilarious. I don't think it's quite as enjoyable as 3. I think 3 all around is a really fun movie, whereas 4 really almost grinds to a halt at certain moments. But it does have its fair share of hilarity. Cecil listed most of the hilarious shit in it. The one thing he left out is Mario Van Peebles' vanishing Jamaican accent that kind of just comes and goes yes. whenever it pleases.
That is due to, and I'm not trying to insult the guy by saying he's not as true of an actor as Roy Scheider. He didn't want to do this movie. And you can kind of tell, though, unlike Jaws 2, you can tell that Peebles doesn't want to be here, can't you?
Yeah, and it's also maybe a little more forgivable because he was still quite young when he did Jaws the Revenge. So I guess it's kind of forgivable, and his character was hilarious just because of the vanishing accent. You get this impression that he just didn't give a shit, which he really shouldn't have had to. Like Michael Caine, where his role as Alfred in the Christopher Nolan Batman movies is his fucking character in Jaws 4. It is.
Hoagie?
It's the same. He hits all the same beats. He does the same thing where he's like he talks about things he's done and his experiences, and he compares them to what other people are going through. Mr. Wayne, when I was in Amityville, I fought a ghost shark. It's like, shut up, you old winded bastard.
Depending on when you saw this movie and how you saw this movie, what ending did you see first? Because there are two endings. The theatrical ending has Ellen Brody literally steering the ship into a rearing up Jaws, and she stabs it, and then it has a bunch of death contortions, and it tears the front of the boat off, and it sinks, and then they all get rescued. But then that ending, a week after its theatrical run, that ending was getting laughs. So they decided to make it more laughable, I guess. And now she stabs the shark, and it fucking explodes. And then because Mario Van Peebles, people liked him, even though we saw him clearly get bit in half, he survives with just, like, some wounds. He comes swimming up to them after the shark explodes, like, "Ay, man, I'm bleeding here, man." And you're like, oh, fuck off. So
that's the one I saw. I saw the second one. That's the one that I remember seeing. And just, I don't see how they thought that was going to be less laughable than the other one, because that's easily more over the top and more hilarious. Like, you can't really get much more over the top than guys surviving being bitten in half and a shark being stabbed and exploding. That's like when they parody action movies and like a truck crashes into like a big rig full of like sugar and it explodes like a nuke.
I saw the it gets stabbed and breaks the front of the ship off, and then they all it sinks. Then when I saw it on video, I was like, wait a minute, that's not the ending that I saw. And
why did the shark just blow up all of a sudden on tape?
I want to see it again, just because now we're talking about it, I'm getting all like nostalgic for how just silly it is. I could go for like a good laugh.
No,
but
this needs to be the next good bad flicks. Do you guys think that, and I'm not counting Jaws 5 Cruel Jaws, we'll talk about that next week, because that's not real Jaws sequel. Do you think Universal was probably best to leave it alone at this point when they already lapsed into self-parody? Do you think they should go for, you know it's going to happen at some point, a Jaws remake is inevitable? Do you think this franchise needs to end where it is, or do you think there's still life in the Jaws franchise?
They should leave it alone. There's just no possible way of them being able to recapture the first one. Because what they're going to do is they'll do kind of what Spielberg wanted to do initially. They'll show the shark too much and
a CG shark.
It'll be a CG shark. It'll probably be like maybe like a two sharks or something, so they'll kill one, and then, oh, but really it was the other shark that was the one they had to worry about. It I can't see them being able to make it good. So I think if they're going to do anything, do the new thing, which like what they're doing with Jurassic Park, where Jurassic World is a sequel, that acts like 2 and 3 never happened. So if they do a Jaws sequel, just act like 2, 3 and, you know, 2, 3 and 4 never happened. Maybe 2, like, so maybe start at 3 and
4. Well, Universal already acts like 3 didn't happen.
Right. So just say that, you know, Jaws 1 and 2 happened and like 3 and 4, you know, never happened. That's the only way I could see them doing it, because trying to remake Jaws, you're immediately going to get nothing but comparisons to it. And unless it is some stellar piece of filmmaking, which it's probably not going to be, it's going to be just a cash-in. I don't see it going over very well. It's too much of a beloved property to attempt to remake, which is why they're going to do it.
I think even if they did a really good job on it, I don't really see people taking it very seriously, because in movies that have sharks, I mean, the Sharknados and the mega sharks and, you know, all the asylum shark movies, I think people would find it difficult to, like, go to a movie about a killer shark and not start laughing. Even if it was played dead straight with really good effects and really good actors, they would compare it to all the goofy shark shit that's been around everywhere, because we really haven't had like a serious shark horror movie in years. The last one I can remember is like Open Water and Deep Blue Sea, and beyond that I can't really
Did you just imply Deep Blue Sea was a serious movie?
Like I said, that's the only one I can think of that would even count as possibly attempting to make like a movie that's on par with Jaws, and it just wasn't.
Peter Benchley, when he wrote the original novel, and remember, he was very instrumental in Jaws, the first film, and even a little bit in Jaws 2. I said that when Jaws hit, it caused a frenzy, no pun intended, across America, the world really, but America specifically. People started killing sharks because this movie made people afraid of sharks. Obviously, you should be afraid of sharks, but not to the ridiculous degree that people were murdering them. No, shark deaths and shark hunters rose almost 900% in the 10 years post-Jaws.
That's like going after goalies because you're afraid of Jason.
Well, Peter Benchley was on the Discovery Channel a couple of years ago during Shark Week, and he said he feels bad that he unintentionally probably caused the deaths of, if not 100,000, probably 500,000 to maybe a million innocent sharks that he killed because of his novel. He is now a conservationist for protecting sharks. And he thinks his novel sort of did more damage than he ever intended it to. So in a weird way, Peter Benchley has reversed himself. Do you think that's a fair way to look at it? Or should he really be blaming himself for the stupidity of the public?
He shouldn't blame himself. I mean, he wrote a book and it spawned a really successful film with some fun sequels. And people decided to take it in a way to justify poaching. It's not his fault that there are fucking dickheads out there that are going after animals because they're inspired to do so by a movie. These are people that should just die of natural selection. You kind of hope that because they're going after the sharks, that the sharks will kill them in self-defense, because they fucking deserve to be. These are people that actually should get killed by sharks. People do get attacked by in certain bodies of water, but they're dangerous animals, and wild animals are things that you should stay away from. And if you go looking for a fucking fight with a shark, you've only yourself to blame. And the guy who wrote the fictional novel of an evil shark in Amityville, in the town of Amity, and the movies that came after it, it's not his fault for the people who took that as motivation to go kill things. Like these people are just pieces of shit.
I think it's ridiculous when something like that happens. It goes to show the general public panic that goes into these sorts of things, where here's a piece of fiction people are taking to the nth degree and going out and killing actual sharks.
All these years later, do you think the new generation coming in, because we saw all these movies when they first came to video, and, you know, some of them I saw 3 and 4 in the theater. Do you think the new generation will appreciate the Jaws franchise as a whole, or do you think that they've been spoiled on the Asylum movies and Red Water and the movies we'll talk about next week? Because a perfect example is the Kevin Smith film Chasing Amy. He had the trading sexual scars scene. That was a parody of Jaws. He got so many people that thought that was a parody of the scene in Lethal Weapon 3 which was a parody of the scene in Jaws. Does that mean that this franchise is kind of lost to the new generation?
More so that a lot of things are lost to the new generation. I know some people who, they don't like the original Jaws. They don't think it's scary. They think it's slow and it's dumb. And there's a bunch of old guys talking about going out and killing a shark. And then by the time they finally get out to kill the shark, you know, that's it's frustrating, because now if they did do the reboot that we're talking about, it would not appeal to us at all. It would be built to appeal to that generation. And it would be, you know, show the shark too much, just lots of boo scares, lots of CGI. And then they'd be, oh, this is so good. It's so much better. That dumb, slow first movie that came out, piece of garbage.
Cecil, I'm gonna say this right now. The "we're going to need a bigger boat" scene is one of the best, most effective jump scares ever.
But I mean, that's the thing. Like, people, I always say about how I don't like, you know, boo/jump scares. It's not that I dislike them. I dislike them when they're overused, when they're not effective. Like something like that. It's like there's in a movie where there really was very, you know, there wasn't any. And then all of a sudden, oh, here we go. Oh, there's the shark. You know, that is effective as hell. It's not opening a closet and having a cat jump out. That was a genuine scare. So that's kind of different than just the, you're sitting in a car and it's dark and all of a sudden somebody bangs on the window and, like, you know, that startles you. It doesn't scare you. Yeah. You know, him throwing chum out to get the shark and then the shark comes up. That scares the shit out of you.
Yeah.
So,
and even like the reaction is great too, because he, like, Roy Scheider kind of just jumps up and he's got the cigarette hanging from his mouth and he's just totally deer in headlights. Like, again, we're going back to him acting through expression. He really has this look on his face that completely illustrates that he absolutely knows just how fucked up and frightening and just awful and terrifying and scary the situation actually is, and how just massive and imposing this thing is.
This generation in general, I mean, there are always exceptions to the rule. There are a lot of people who are of the younger generation who like this stuff, who like The Exorcist and Amityville Horror and find the slow burn stuff scary. But unfortunately, it's outweighed by some of the people I work with who are younger, who are always, you know, oh my God, did you see Transformers 2 was the best movie I've ever seen? It's like, oh.
I think you need to start taking bricks to your coworkers' heads.
I certainly do.
I don't know if I would recommend that to, like, really any kind of viewer, because you have a very lopsided franchise there. You have two incredibly solid movies, and then it kind of derails into schlock, unintentional schlock, because it had a bigger budget than the first two movies. But I think if you go into it with an open mind, because you've got two genuinely good horror movies, and if you're somebody who enjoys, like movies that can end up being so bad they're good and really cheesy and really corny, and you can sit through it, take it for what it is, and laugh with it, laugh at it. I think it is a franchise that you can have a lot of fun with. I definitely recommend the first one and the second one, and then the other two. For people that can't stand, I guess you could say, really corny, bad, cheesy, terribly written films, maybe don't see those. But if you're somebody that can have fun with something regardless and take it for what it is and enjoy it for what it is, then yeah, I enjoy the series as a whole, because it's there's a lot of variety there. There's really genuinely good horror, and there's a shark that's faster than a fucking jet.
If people want to see you fleeing to the Bahamas before you have your affair with Hoagie, where would they do so?
You can find me having a fling with Hoagie, because, you know, who wouldn't, at escapistmagazine.com and geekjuicemedia.com.
Peter, we all know you are Sean Brody in the fourth film, so just go get your arm bitten off and get it over with.
You can find me slowly zooming in toward you like a cardboard cutout at Cinematica on Twitter, The Cinemasochist on Facebook, Cinemasochus on YouTube, and on 1201beyond.com. And go check out 1201beyond.com. Get some t-shirts and smile, you son of a bitch.
And you can find me at 1201beyond.com. You can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. And I say, dead eyes, like a daughter's eyes.
That wasn't any better than mine.
Is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.